Sure. Sufis, the People of the Path, Volume 2. Talk from Sufism, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 5.
Bhagwan, the Sufi master Ajnabi said, "Write to Mulla Feroz and tell him that I have no time to engage him in correspondence, and therefore have nothing to say to his letter." The disciple Amini said, "Is it your intention to annoy him with this letter?" Ajnabi said, "He has been annoyed by some of my writings. This annoyance has caused him to write to me. My purpose in writing the passage which angers him was to anger such as he." Amini said, "And this letter will anger him further?" Ajnabi said, "Yes. When he was enraged at what I wrote, he did not observe his own anger, which was my intention. He thought that he was observing me, whereas he was only feeling angry. Now I write again to arouse his anger, so that he will see that he is angry. The objective is for the man to realize that my work is a mirror in which he sees himself." Amini said, "The people of the ordinary world always regard those who cause anger as ill-intentioned." Ajnabi said, "The child may regard the adult who tries to remove a thorn from his hand as ill-intentioned. Is that a justification for trying to prevent the child from growing up?" Amini said, "And if the child harbors a grudge against the adult who removes the thorn?" Ajnabi said, "The child does not really harbor that grudge, because something in him knows the truth." Amini asked him, "But what happens if he never gets to know himself, and yet continues to imagine that others are motivated by personal feelings?" Ajnabi said, "If he never gets to know himself, it makes no difference as to what he thinks of other people, because he can never have any appreciation of what others are really like." Amini asked, "Is it not possible, instead of arousing anger a second time, to explain that the original writing was composed for this purpose, and to invite Mulla to review his previous feelings?" Ajnabi said, "It is possible to do this, but it will have no effect. Rather, it will have an adverse effect. If you tell the man your reason, he will imagine that you are excusing yourself, and this will arouse in him sentiments which are harmful only to him. Thus, by explaining, you are actually acting to his detriment." Amini said, "Are there no exceptions to this rule, that man must learn through realizing his own state, and that his state cannot be explained to him?" Ajnabi said, "There are exceptions, but if there were enough exceptions to make any difference to the world, we would not by now have any Mulla Ferozes left."
Man's being is very simple, but his personality is not. The personality is very complex. The personality is like an onion. Many layers of conditioning, corruption, poisoning. Hidden behind many layers, what Sufis call filters, is man's simple being. But that simple being is behind so many filters, you cannot see it. And hidden behind these so many filters, you cannot see the world either. Because whatsoever reaches you, before it reaches, it is corrupted by the filter. Never anything reaches you as it is. You go on missing it. There are many interpreters in between. You see something, first your eyes falsify, your senses. Then your ideology, your religion, your society, your church, they falsify. Then your emotions, they falsify, and so on and so forth. By the time it reaches to you, it has almost nothing of the original. Are so little that it makes no difference. You see something only if your filters allow it. And the filters don't allow much. Scientists agree with the Sufis. Scientists say we see only 2% of reality. Only 2%. 98% is missed. When you are hearing to me, you will hear only the 2% that has been told, that has been said. 98% will be lost. And when the 98% is lost, the 2% is out of context. It is as if you have taken 2 pages from a novel at random, one from here, one from there, and then you start reconstructing the whole novel from these 2 pages. The 98 pages are missing. You have no inkling what they were. You don't know even that they were. You have only 2 pages and you reconstruct the whole novel again. This reconstruction is your invention. It is not discovery of truth. It is your imagination. And there is an inner necessity to fill the gaps. Whenever you see that 2 things are unrelated, the mind has an inner urgency to relate them. Otherwise, it feels very uneasy. So you invent a link. You fix those loose things with a link. You bridge them. And you go on inventing the world that is not there. So before we can enter into this small but immensely valuable dialogue between the masters and the disciples, you will have to understand these layers, these filters. Gurdjieff used to call these filters buffers. They protect you against reality. They protect your lies. They protect your dreams. They protect your projections. They don't allow you to come in contact with reality, because the very contact is going to be shattering. Shocking. Man lives through lies. Friedrich Nietzsche is reported to have said that please don't take the lies away from humanity, otherwise man will not be possible to live. Man lives through lies. Don't take the fictions away. Don't destroy the myths. Don't tell the truth. Because man cannot live by truth. And he is right about 99.9% people. But what kind of life can there be through lies? It will be a big lie itself. And what kind of happiness is possible through lies? There is no possibility. Hence, humanity is in misery. With truth is bliss. With lies, there is only misery and nothing else. But we go on protecting those lies. Those lies are comfortable. But they keep you protected against bliss, against truth, against God. Sufis say man is exactly like an onion. And the religion is the art of how to peel the onion and come to its innermost core. And what is the innermost core of an onion? Have you ever peeled an onion? You go on peeling one layer, and another, and so on and so forth. Then a point comes, the last layer is taken off, and only emptiness is left in your hand. That is fana. If you go on peeling your being, the last layer will be of being baka, and beyond that will be emptiness, fana. So you can think in this way. At the very innermost core, there is emptiness. Pure sky. Nothingness. Fana. The first layer around fana is that of baka. Individuality. What religions call the self, atman, the soul. But the soul is already a step away from your being. The self is already distant from your being. Buddha has the right word for it. He calls it anatta, no self. Your innermost being is a non-being. Nothing is there, or only nothing is. The first layer, the first fence that surrounds it is baka, individuality. This is true. This is your true and simple being. Non-being surrounded by being, defined by being. The real core is empty. But the emptiness has to be defined by something. Otherwise, there will be no division between you and anything else. So a thin, very thin layer of being divides. But that being is also a circumference, not the center. At the center is fana, dissolution, disappearance. Even at the point of baka, individuality, you don't meet God. You still are there. Very little is left of you, but it's still just a thin line. Even that has to disappear in fana, then you enter God. Start from the other end. Start peeling the onion. The first layer is made of corrupted physical senses. Never for a single moment think that your physical senses are as they should be. They are not. They have been trained. You see things. If your society allows you to see them. You hear things. If your society allows you to hear them. You touch. If your society allows you to touch. Man has lost many of his senses. For example, smell. Man has almost lost. just see a dog and his capacity to smell. How sensitive is his nose? Man seems to be very poor. What has happened to man's nose? Why can't he smell so deeply as a dog or as a horse? The horse can smell from miles. The dog has immense memory about the smell. Man has no memory. Something is blocking the nose. Those who have been working deep into these layers say it is because of repression. Repression of the sex, that smell is lost. Physically, man is as sensitive as any other animal. But psychologically, his nose has been corrupted. A smell is one of the most sexual door into your body. It is through a smell that animals start feeling whether a male is in tune with the female or not. The smell is a subtle hint. When the female is ready to make love to the male, see, releases a certain kind of smell. Only through that the male understands that he is acceptable. If that smell is not released by the feminine sexual organism, the male moves away. He is not accepted. Man has desired it because it will be difficult to create so-called cultured society if your smell sense remains natural. You are moving on the road and the woman starts smelling and gives you a signal of acceptance. She is somebody else's wife. The husband is with her. The signal is there that you are acceptable. What you will do? It will be awkward, embarrassing. Your wife is walking with you and there is no smell by her body, and suddenly a man passes by and she gives the signals, and those are very unconscious signals. You cannot control them suddenly. Then you will become aware that she is interested in the other man. She is welcoming the other man. That will create trouble. So down the centuries, man has discarded his smell completely. It is not just accidental that in cultured countries, much time is wasted to remove all kind of smell from the body. The body odor has to be completely discarded by deodorants, deodorant soaps. It has to be covered by layers of perfume, strong perfume. These are all disguises. These are ways to avoid a reality that is still there. When you make love, male, female, both release a certain kind of smell. That smell has to be destroyed. Because if the man is making love to the woman, and the woman is not really into it, she will not release the smell. The man will be offended, hurt. He will immediately feel it that the woman is not getting any orgasm. and the male ego will feel very offended. The smell has to be discarded completely, so that the man never knows about that the woman was simply pretending that she is having an orgasm, just making empty gestures, befooling him, buttressing his ego. And he feels satisfied because the woman looks satisfied, but whether she is really satisfied or not, there is no way now to detect once the smell is discharged. Because the smell is so much sexual, that's why we have discharged the nose, utterly discharged the nose. Even in language, you can see the difference. To see means one thing. To hear, one thing. But to smell means just the opposite. To see means capacity to see. But to smell does not mean the capacity to smell. It means that you are smelly. Even in language, the repression has entered. And the same has happened with other senses. You don't see people eye to eye. Or even if you see, then only for a few seconds. You don't see people really, you go on avoiding. If you see, it is thought to be offensive. Just remember, do you really see people, or you go on avoiding your eyes? Because if you don't avoid, then you may be able to see few things which the person is not willing to show. That is not good manners, to see something that he is not willing to show. So it is better to avoid. We listen to the words, we don't see to the face, because many times words and face are contradictory. He is saying one thing and he is showing another. By and by we have completely lost the sense of seeing the face, the eyes, the gestures. We only listen to the words. Just watch this and you will be surprised that people go on saying one thing and showing another and nobody detects. Because we have been trained not to look directly into the face. Or even if you look, the look is not that of awareness, not that of attention. It is empty. It is almost as if you are not looking. We hear sounds by choice. We don't hear all kinds of sounds. Just we choose. Whatsoever is useful, we hear. And to different societies and different countries, different things are valuable. For a man who lives in a primitive world, in a forest, in a jungle, he has a different kind of receptivity for sounds. He has to be continuously alert and aware of the animals. His life is in danger. You need not. You live in a cultured world where animals don't exist anymore and there is no fear. Your survival is not at stake. Your ears don't function perfectly. There is no need. Have you seen a hare or a deer? How attentive they are. How sensitive. just a small sound, a dead leaf is stirred by the wind and the deer is alert. You would not have noticed it at all. And great music surrounds life. Subtle music surrounds life. But we are absolutely unaware of it. There is great rhythm. But to feel it, you will need more alert ears, more alert eyes, more alert touch. So the first layer is of corrupted physical senses. We see only what we want to see. Our whole body mechanism is poisoned. Our body has been made rigid. We live in a kind of frozenness. We are cold, closed, unavailable. We are so afraid of life that we have killed all kinds of possibilities from where life can make a contact with us. People don't touch each other. They don't hold hands. They don't hug each other. And when you hold somebody's hand, you feel embarrassed, he feels embarrassed. Even if you hug somebody, it feels as if something wrong is happening. And you are in a hurry to get away from the other's body. Because the other's body can open you. The warmth of the other's body can open you. Even children are not allowed to hug their parents. There is great fear. And all fear is basically deep down rooted in the fear of sex. It is a taboo against sex. A mother cannot hug his son. Because the son may get sexually aroused, that is the fear. A father cannot hug his daughter. He is afraid he may get physically aroused. Warmth has its own ways to work. Nothing is wrong in being physically aroused or sexually aroused. It is simply a sign that one is alive. One is immensely alive. But the fear, the sex taboo, keep away. Keep at distance. Sudha's father was dying. He was very old. He was my sannyasi. And Sudha was very much puzzled because before he died, his hands will go again and again to his genital organs. The hands had to be pulled away. And she was puzzled and worried naturally. What is happening to his father? Is there some sexual depression? Why his hands go to the sexual organs, to the genitals again and again? And he is almost getting unconscious. It happens to many people when they are dying. One of the reasons is repression, but only one. They are losing the social consciousness. They are losing the conditioning. This first layer of corrupted senses is disappearing. Death is moving in. They are becoming small children again. Small children play with their genital organs. They are not yet corrupted. They enjoy with their body. They love their body. They are playful about it. It is fun. Now the man is no more old. He is becoming again younger. Death is taking the layer away. One thing. Another thing, when a man dies, all his senses for a single moment become totally alive as they should have been if they were not corrupted. It is like before a lamp goes out, the flame burns bright for a single second with intensity. Exactly the same happens when life is going out. For a single moment, the last effort is made to live. And one burns bright with total sensitivity. Another reason, when a man is dying, naturally death is very close to birth. The circle is complete. Death is very close to life. It is the very crescendo of life. Life comes out of sex energy, and life is moving back into sex energy. But our all senses are corrupted. We have not been allowed to be natural. Hence man has lost dignity, innocence, grace, elegance. This is the first layer. And because of all these repressions, the body has become non-orgasmic. There is no joy. It has happened both to man and woman, almost in the same way, but man has gone deeper into corruption than women. Because man is very perfectionist, neurotically perfectionist. Once he takes some idea, he tries to go to the very extreme of it. Women are more practical. Less perfectionistic, less neurotic, more earthly, more balanced, less intellectual, more intuitive. They have not gone to the very end. It is good that women have not gone to the same neurosis as men. That's why they still retain some dignity, some grace, some roundness of being, some poetry. But both have been corrupted by the society. Both have become harsh. Men more, women a little less, but the difference is only of degrees. Because of this layer, everything that enters in you has to pass this filter first. And this filter destructs, destroys, interprets, manipulates, gives new colors of its own, projects, invents, and the reality becomes very garbage. When this layer disappears, and that is the whole effort of yoga, to make your body again alive, sensitive, young, to give your senses their maximum functioning, then one functions with no taboos around. Lucidity, grace, beauty, flow. Warmth arises again. Openness and growth happens. One is constantly new, young, and one is always on an adventure. Body becomes orgasmic. joy surrounds you. Through joy, the first corruption disappears. Hence my insistence to be joyous, to be celebrating, to enjoy life, to accept the body, not only accept, feel grateful that God has given you such a beautiful body, such a sensitive body, with so many doors to relate with reality, eyes and ears and nose and touch. Open all these windows and let life's breeze flow in. Let life's sun shine in. Learn to be more sensitive. Use every opportunity to be sensitive so that first filter is dropped. If you are sitting on the grass, then just don't go on pulling the grass and destroying it. I had to stop sitting on the lawn. Otherwise, I used to give darshan on the lawn. But people will go on destroying the grass. They will go on pulling the grass. I had to stop it. People are so violent, so unconsciously violent, they don't know what they are doing. And they were told again and again. But within minutes, they will forget. They are so restless. They don't know what they are doing. Just the grass is available to their restlessness. They start pulling it and destroying it. When you are sitting on the grass, close your eyes. Become the grass. Be grassy. Feel that you are grass. Feel the greenness of the grass. Feel the wetness of the grass. Feel the subtle smell that goes on being released by the grass. Feel the dewdrops on the grass. They are on you. Feel the sun rays playing on the grass. For a moment be lost into it. And you will have a new sense of your body. And do it in all kinds of situations. In a river, in a swimming pool, lying on the beach in the sun rays, looking at the moon in the night, lying down with closed eyes on the sands and feeling the sands. Millions of opportunities are there to make your body again alive, and only you can do it. Society has done its work of corruption. You will have to undo it. And once you start hearing, seeing, touching, smelling through joy, then you hear the reality, then you see the reality, then you smell the reality. The second layer is of conditioning, social, political, religious, ideological, belief systems. Belief systems make you non-communicative. You are a Hindu and I am a Mohammedan. Immediately there is no communication. You are a man, I am a man, there is communication. But you are a communist and I am a fascist, communication stops. All belief systems are destructive to communication. And whole life is nothing but communicating. Communicating with trees, communicating with rivers, communicating with sun and moon, communicating with people and animals. It is communication. Life is communication. Dialogue disappears when you are burdened with belief systems. How can you really be in a dialogue? You are already too full of your ideas and you think they are absolutely true. When you are listening to the other, you are just being polite, otherwise you don't listen. You know what is right. You are simply waiting so that this man finishes and you jump upon him. Yes, there can be a debate and a discussion and argumentation, but there can be no dialogue. Between two beliefs, there is no possibility of dialogue. Beliefs destroy friendship. Belief destroys humanity. Belief destroys communion. So if you really want to see and hear and listen, then you will have to drop all belief systems. You can't be a Hindu and you can't be a Mohammedan, you can't be a Christian. You can't afford these kinds of nonsense. You have to be sensible enough to be without belief. Caged in one's own system, you are unavailable and the other is unavailable to you. People are moving like windowless houses. Yes, you come close. Sometimes you clash into each other, but you never meet. Yes, sometimes you touch, but you never meet. You talk, but you never communicate. Everybody is imprisoned into his own conditionings. Everybody is carrying his own prison around him. This has to be dropped. Beliefs create a kind of smugness. And beliefs stop exploration because one becomes afraid. Maybe you come across something which is against your belief, then what? So it will disturb your whole system. It is better not to explore. Remain confined to a dull, dead, defined world. Never go beyond it. It gives you a as if kind of knowledge, as if one knows. You don't know anything. You don't know anything about God, but you have a certain belief about God. You don't know anything about truth, but you have a theory about truth. This as if is very dangerous. This is a kind of hypnotized state of the mind. Male and female all have been conditioned, although in different ways. Because man has been conditioned to be aggressive, to be competitive, to be manipulative, to be egoistic. Man has been prepared for a different kind of work, to be the exploiter and to be the oppressor and to be the master. Women have been given belief systems to be the slaves. They have been taught how to submit. They have been given a very, very small world, the household. Their whole life had been taken away from them. But once the belief system settles in, the woman accepts it and remains confined to it. And the man accepts it and remains confined to it. Men have been taught not to cry. Tears are not manly, so men don't cry. Now what kind of foolishness is this? Crying, weeping, sometimes has such a therapeutic effect. It is needed, it is a must, it unburdens. Man goes on burdening himself because he cannot cry and cannot weep. It is unmanly. And women have been taught to cry and weep. It is perfectly womanly. So to go on crying and weep even where it is not needed. Just a belief system. They use it as a strategy to manipulate. The woman knows through argument she will not be able to win the husband. But she can cry and that works. So that becomes her argument. Man is corrupted in one way, he cannot cry. The woman is corrupted in another way. He starts crying, uses crying as a strategy to dominate. Crying becomes political. And when your tears are political, they lose beauty. They are ugly. This second conditioning is one of the most difficult thing to get rid of. It is very complex. You have a certain political ideology, certain religious ideology, and thousands of other things jumbled together in your mind. They have become so much a part of you that you don't think they are separate from you. When you say, I am a Hindu, you don't say that I have a belief called Hinduism. No, you say, I am Hindu. You are identified with Hinduism. If Hinduism is in danger, you think you are in danger. If somebody burns a temple, you think you are in danger. Or somebody burns the Quran, and you think you are in danger because you are a Mohammedan. These belief systems have to be dropped. Then understanding arises. Then readiness to explore. Then innocence. Then you are surrounded by a sense of mystery. Ah, wonders. The life is no more a known thing. It is an adventure. It is so mysterious that you can go on exploring, there is no end to it. And you never make any belief. You remain in a state of not knowing. That Sufis insist very much, and so is the insistence of Zen masters. In fact, of all great masters of the world, if they agree on any one thing, that is the state of not knowing. Remain constantly in the state of not knowing. If you happen to know something, don't make a belief out of it. Go on dropping it. Go on throwing it. Don't let it surround you. Otherwise, sooner or later, it will become a hard crust and you will not be available again to life. Remain always childlike. Then communication becomes possible. Then dialogue becomes possible. When two people who are in a state of not knowing talk, there is meeting. They commune. There is nothing to hinder. You will be able to understand me only if you are in a state of not knowing. Because I am in that state continuously. With me, communion is possible if you drop your belief systems. Otherwise, they will hinder the path. The third filter, the third layer is pseudo-reasoning, rationalization, explanations, excuses. All are borrowed. Not a single is your own authentic experience. But they give a kind of satisfaction. You think you are a very rational being. You cannot become rational by accumulating borrowed arguments and proofs. The real reason arises only when you are intelligent. And remember, there is a difference between intellectual and the man whom I call intelligent. The intellectual is hidden behind the pseudo-reasoning. His reason may be very logical, but it can never be reasonable. his reason is just pseudo. It appears like reason. Listen. I have heard the man was drowning. Help! I can't swim. I can't swim. He cried. I can't either, said the old man sitting on the river bank, chewing tobacco. But I am not hollering about it. Now, perfectly rational. Why you are hollering about it? You don't know swimming, neither do I. So keep quiet. But you are sitting on the bank and he is in the river, the situation is different. The context is different. When Buddha says one thing, you can repeat the same thing, but the context is different. When Muhammad says something, you can repeat exactly the same thing, and it will not mean the same thing, because the context is different. And context matters, not what you say. Not what you say, but who you are, that matters.
I have heard
Donegan sat in the confessional. Father, he moaned, I have done something so bad, you are going to throw me out of the church. What did you do, my son? Asked the priest. Yesterday, said Donegan, I saw my wife sitting in front of me, and it got me so excited, I grabbed her, ripped off her clothes, threw her down on the floor, and we had sex right then and there. That's a little unusual, said the priest, but no reason for excommunication. Are you sure you are not going to throw me out of the church? Of course not. Well, said Donegan, they threw us out of the supermarket. It all depends on the context. Who you are, where you are, from what point of view, from what experience you utter. I use the same words as you use, but they don't mean the same. They can't mean the same. When I utter them, I utter them. When you utter them, you utter them. The words are the same, but because they come from different spaces, they carry different meaning, different connotations, different flavors. Different music. The pseudo reasoning is just apparently reasoning. It is not knowing. It is more for the sake of finding excuses. It is more for the sake of argumentation. In this kind of deceiving, the male mind is very expert. This is male mind's expertise. He has learned the art very deeply. This filter is very, very strong in the male mind. Real reason arises only when pseudo-reasoning has been dropped. What is real reason? Carl Jaspers has defined it perfectly. He says, reason is openness. Reason is clarity. Reason is will to unity. Reason uses logic, its methods and categories of understanding, just to transcend them. Reason is ultimate flowering of wisdom, but not reasoning, not pseudo reasoning. Beware of the pseudo. The pseudo always creates a filter, and the real always becomes the door. The real is always a bridge, and the pseudo is always a block. This third pseudo-reasoning layer is one of the greatest disturbances in your being. Fourth is emotionality, sentimentalism, that is pseudo-feeling, much ado about nothing, much fuss. The female mind is very expert in this. It is kind of empty. It is just on the surface. It is impotent sympathy. It does not do a thing. If somebody is ill, you sit by the side and you cry. Your crying is not going to help. The house is on fire and you cry. That is not going to help either. This pseudo kind of feeling has to be detected. Otherwise, you will never know what real feeling is. The real feeling is involvement, commitment. It is empathy, not only sympathy. It is action. Whenever you really feel something in your heart, it immediately transforms. It becomes action. That is the criterion, if your feeling becomes action. If your feeling just remains a feeling, never becomes an action, then know well, it is pseudo. Then you are deceiving yourself or somebody else. Many times people come to me and they say, Bhagwan, we feel much love for you. We understand what you say. But, and that but, decides all that they have said before it. They say, we feel that what you are saying is right. What you are doing is right, but we cannot become sannyasins. If you feel what I am saying right, if you feel what I am saying is truth, then how can you avoid becoming sannyasins? It is impossible. Then your feeling will become action. Then feeling has to become commitment. Otherwise, what is the point? One can never go against one's heart. If you are still going against your own heart, then you must have a pseudo heart, which is a pretender. Just as the third is the field for male expertise, the fourth is the field for female expertise. The fifth is corrupted, poisoned instincts, repression, disfiguration. Gurdjieff used to say that all your centers are overlapping each other, are misplaced, are interfering with each other, trespassing. And you don't know what is what. Each center in its own function is beautiful, but when it starts interfering into somebody else's functioning, then there is great difficulty. Then the whole system goes neurotic. For example, if your sex center functions as a sex center, it is perfectly good. But people have been so much repressing it that the sex center does not exist in many people in their genitals. It has moved into their head. This is what overlapping is. Now they make love through their heads. Hence the so much importance for pornography. Visualization. Even while making love to your woman, you may be thinking of some beautiful actress that you are making love to her. Then suddenly you become interested in making love to your woman. In fact, that woman is non-existential. Your own woman is non-existential. It is a kind of masturbation. You are not making love to her. You are making love to somebody else who is not there. You go on in the head fantasizing. Religious repression has disturbed all your centers. It is very difficult even to see that your centers are separate. And each center functioning in its own field is perfectly right. When it interferes into somebody else's field, then problems arise. Then a confusion of your totality. Then you don't know what is what. Sex can be transformed when it is confined to its own center. It cannot be transformed from the head. It has created a pseudo center in the head. I have heard from time to time, saints are allowed to visit the earth in disguise. Saint Teresa had long wanted to pay a visit to Hollywood, but Gabriel, who was in charge of the roster, thought that even a saint would not be able to come through unscathed after visiting the movie capital. Eventually, however, Saint Teresa persuaded him that no harm would come to her, and set off on the first available earthbound cloud. The weeks stretched into months without any word from earth, so one day a very worried Gabriel put through a telephone call to Los Angeles. The connection was made, the phone rang, and finally a voice said, "Terry here. Who is this?" "Gabby, darling, how absolutely marvelous to hear from you." Now, Saint Teresa is no more Saint Teresa. Terry. And Gabriel is no more Gabriel. Gabby, darling. The Hollywood has corrupted Saint Teresa. Your so-called saints are only avoiding the world, are repressed beings. If opportunities are made available to them, they will fall far below than you. They are just somehow holding themselves back because of the fear of hell and the greed for heaven. But whatsoever you have repressed because of fear or greed remains there. And not only remains there, becomes unnatural, perverted, moves into deeper realms of your consciousness and unconsciousness. And then it becomes very difficult to uproot it. Gurdjieff was a Sufi. His whole teaching comes from Sufi masters. He introduced in the Western world methods how to demark each center and how to allow the center to function in its own field. The head should function as far as reason is concerned, that's all. Have you watched? Sometimes people come to me and they say, I think I love you. I think I love you. Now, love has nothing to do with thinking. How can you think that you love me? But they don't know how to function from the heart directly. Even the heart has to go via the head. They cannot simply say, I love you. Just the other night, one beautiful Italian woman took sannyas. I have given her the name Prem Nisanga. She was a woman of the heart. Something rare. She was so happy, she almost started dancing. There was no need to say anything. Her whole body said it. She went into such ecstasy that you can go on saying in thousand ways and it will not be so deep as just by going into ecstasy, shouting in joy. I don't know what she was saying because she was saying in Italian. But her face, her eyes, her hands, her whole body was saying it. There was no need to understand her language. The language was irrelevant. When you say from the heart, no language is needed. When you say from the head, only language can say. There is no other way to say it. Watch and observe. Let the head function as reason. Let the heart function as feeling. Let the sex center function as sex. Let everything function in their own way. Don't allow mechanisms to mix into each other. Otherwise, you will have corrupted instincts. When instinct is natural, untabooed, spontaneous, without any inhibition, there is a clarity in your body, a harmony in your body. There is a humming sound in your organism. And the sixth layer is also male expertise, and the sixth is corrupted intuition. There is a phenomenon called intuition of which we have become almost unaware. We don't know that anything like intuition exists. Because intuition is the sixth layer. Those five layers are so thick that one never comes to feel the sixth. Intuition is a totally different kind of phenomenon than reason. Reason argues. Reason has a process to reach a conclusion. Intuition jumps. It is a quantum leap. It knows no process. It simply reaches to the conclusion without any process. There have been many mathematicians who could do any kind of mathematical problem without going into its process. Their functioning was intuitive. You just tell the problem, and you have not even said it, and the conclusion will come. There has not been a time gap at all. You were saying it the moment you finished, or not even finished, and the conclusion has come. Mathematicians have always been puzzled by these freak phenomena. These people, how they do it? Because if a mathematician is going to do this problem, it may take 3 hours, or 2 hours, or 1 hour. Even a computer will take at least few minutes to do it. But these people don't take a single moment. There you say, and instantly. So now in mathematics, intuition is a recognized fact. When reason fails, only intuition can work. And all the great scientists have become aware of it, that all their great discoveries are made not by reason, but by intuition. Madame Curie was working for 3 years upon a certain problem and trying to solve it from many directions, and every direction failed. Utterly exhausted, one night she went to sleep and she decided. The incident is almost like Buddha. That night she decided, now it is enough. 3 years I have wasted. It seems to be a futile search. I have to drop it. That night she dropped it, went to sleep. And in the night she went, got up. In sleep she went to her table and wrote the answers. Then went back, fell into sleep. In the morning she could not even remember. But the answer was there on the table, and there was nobody in the room. And even if there was somebody, the answer was not possible. She has been working for 3 years, one of the greatest minds of this age. But there was nobody, and the answer was there. Then she looked more minutely. It was her handwriting. Then suddenly, the dream surfaced. She remembered, as if she had seen a dream in the night, that she is sitting on the table and writing something. Then by and by, everything surfaced. She had come to the conclusion from some other door, which is not reason. It is intuition. Buddha struggled for 6 years to attain samadhi and could not attain. One day he dropped the whole idea of attaining. Rested under the tree, and by the morning it has happened. When he opened his eyes, he was in samadhi. But first the reason has to be exhausted. Intuition functions only when reason is exhausted. Intuition has no process. It simply jumps from the problem to the conclusion. It is a shortcut. It is a flash. We have corrupted intuition. Men's intuition is almost absolutely corrupted. Women's intuition is not so much corrupted. That's why women have something called hunch. Hunch is just a fragment of intuition. They cannot prove it. You are going to take a flight, and your woman simply says she is not going, and she will not allow you either to go. She feels as if something is going to happen. Now this is nonsense. You have much work to do, everything is planned, and you have to go, and your woman won't allow. And next day you read in the newspapers, the aeroplane has been hijacked. Are fell, and all the passengers died. Now the woman cannot say how she knows. There is no way. Just a hunch. Just a feel in the guts. but that too is very corrupted, that fire flesh. When all the five other layers have disappeared, and you have dropped the idea, because you have been taught that reason is the only door to reach to any conclusion. When you have dropped this fixation, reason fixation, intuition starts flowering. Then it is not just like a flesh. It is a constantly available source. You can close your eyes and you can go into it. And always you can have the right direction from it. That's what Fisher Hoffman people think as guide. If really the process goes in, which is very difficult, because those five layers have to be crossed first. And I don't think many people are capable, even those who are in Fisher Hoffman therapy. But the idea is perfectly right, that if those five layers are broken, then something arises in you, which can be called the guide. You can always go into your intuition energy, and you will always find right advice. That is what in the East they have always been calling the inner guru, your inner master. Once your intuition has started functioning, you need not go and ask any outer guru for any advice. Intuition is in tune with oneself, totally in tune with oneself. And out of that tuning, solutions arise from nowhere. And the seventh and the last layer of falsity is the pseudo-self, ego. Notions of being unique, special, exceptional. Notions of doing one's own thing and not knowing who you are and not knowing what is your thing is. Notions of the ego go on corrupting you. Then you cannot listen to the truth. And this becomes a problem every day. Just the other day, I was talking about Hannah. Rather than understanding what I have said, rather than feeling my compassion, because why I should say it? She had an appointment. She immediately went into the office and cancelled the appointment. She became so angry. Now I was talking about her ego. Rather than seeing it, she acted out of it again. She missed the point again. Just the other day, I was talking about Prageet. He was better than Hanna. He asked for an appointment. He took it more rightly. Of course, he was very much shaken. It was hard to digest, hard to swallow. But he tried his hardest to see the point of it. He made every effort that he can do. Or, for example, I go on hammering on Chinmaya again and again. I never hammer anybody else as much as I hammer Chinmaya. But he takes it absolutely rightly, in the exact way as it should be taken. And each hammering has become a growth in him. And each hammering has helped him. He is moving. Hanna got stopped there. She may lose contact with me. This is the last layer, a very subtle pseudo-sense of self. These seven broken, then you come to the state of Baka, real individuality. And when you have real individuality, then there is a possibility to have a real non-being. From real individuality, Baka, you can have the jump into Fana. Then you can offer yourself to God. This is the whole process. Now this beautiful dialogue between a master and his disciples. Now you will be able to understand. The Sufi master Ajnabi said, write to Mullah Firoz and tell him that I have no time to engage him in correspondence and therefore have nothing to say to his letter. Mullah Firoz must have been a very learned man of those days. Mullah means a pundit, a scholar, a learned man. He must have been offended and annoyed by Ajnabi's assertions. Masters are there to shock. And when there is a man of knowing, the greatest shock is for those who think they know and don't know. The knowledgeable feels immediately offended, because the man of knowing has his own source of knowing. He talks from there, and the man of knowledge looks into the scriptures. He has no source to check upon it. He has no authentic experience of his own. He lives in pseudo-reason, pseudo-ego, argumentation, verbal knowledge, belief systems, and all that. Sufi master Ajnabi said to his disciple Amini, write to Mullah Firoz and tell him that I have no time to engage him in correspondence and therefore have nothing to say to his letter. The disciple Amini said, is it your intention to annoy him with this letter? That is the intention always of all the masters, to annoy you. Because only if you are annoyed, you can be changed. If you are annoyed, then there is a possibility. Then you start moving. Ajnabi said, he has been annoyed by some of my writings. This annoyance has caused him to write to me. My purpose in writing the passage which angers him was to anger such as he. That was my purpose, and it is fulfilled. I wanted to anger people such as he, the knowledgeable people. Amini said, and this letter will anger him further. Ajnabi said, yes. When he was enraged at what I wrote, he did not observe his own anger, which was my intention. He thought that he was observing me, whereas he was only feeling angry. Now I write again to arouse anger so that he will see that he is angry. The objective is for the man to realize that my work is a mirror in which he sees himself. This you have to keep in your mind constantly, because this is happening every day here. If I say something, never be bothered about me. Don't think that why I have said this. Rather, on the contrary, just look inside yourself what it has done to you. I said something about Hanna. Now these are the two possibilities. Either she thinks about me that this man is wrong. He is offending me. He is insulting me, humiliating me, degrading me. something like that, then she has missed the point. But if she starts watching and observing, why I am angered? Why this annoyance in me? Why I am disturbed? Then she is on the right track. Then she will come closer to me than she was ever before. Always remember this. What I say, how I say, why I say, there is no way for you to decide. There is no way for you even to understand. All that you can do in your situation right now is what happens to you. If I slap your face, don't be worried why I slapped you. Whether I am an angry man or aggressive man or violent, don't be worried about that. Just close your eyes and go into meditation and see why you are feeling offended. Why? Watch your mind. That is going to help. That's why here I don't want mediocre people who have just come out of curiosity to listen to me. This is not a school. Nothing is being taught here. This is an alchemical lab. Something is happening here. It is a process of transformation. If you remember it, you will be benefited immensely. Yes, when he was enraged at what I wrote, he did not observe his own anger, which was my intention. He thought that he was observing me, whereas he was only feeling angry. Now I write again to arouse anger. The master is saying, out of compassion, I will give him another opportunity. So that he will see that he is angry. The objective is for the man to realize that my work is a mirror in which he sees himself. That's what a master is, a mirror in which you see yourself. If sometimes you see your face ugly, don't try to destroy the mirror. Change your face. By destroying the mirror, you will not become beautiful. Or by escaping from the mirror, you will not become beautiful. Yesterday, Prajit thought the whole day continuously to escape. How to escape from here? But again and again, he remembers that he has not to escape. He has to face it. Again and again, he remembers and cooled down. Again and again, the idea was there, pulling him to escape from here. That is nature. It is understandable. But if you can remember, even for few single moments, and can remain with me, and can go on facing the mirror, sooner or later you will have to change. There are only two possibilities. Either escape from the mirror, then you will never see your face, and you can believe that you are beautiful. Or go on facing the mirror, go on seeing your ugliness, and all kinds of methods and processes are being made available to you so that you can change your face. Just 2 days before, there was one man who took sannyas, and he says, I am a beautician. I told him, I am also a beautician. I do the same work. I change people's faces. And not the faces that you can see from the outside, but the faces, the original faces, that are hidden deep behind all kinds of faces, all kinds of layers. Amini said, the people of the ordinary world always regard those who cause anger as ill intentions. That's what Hannah thought. That's what for a few moments even Pragit thought. That's what in the beginning Chinmay used to thought. But now that point he has crossed. I have been hammering him so much that how long you can go on thinking? One day or other one has to become aware that something is wrong somewhere inside oneself and that has to be dropped. Ajnabi said, the child may regard the adult who tries to remove a thorn from his hand as ill intentions. Is that a justification for trying to prevent the child from growing up? Amini said, and if the child harbors a grudge against the adult who removes the thorn? Ajnabi said, the child does not really harbor that grudge because something in him knows the truth. This is of immense value, this statement. Yes, something in you always knows the truth. Something in Hanna knows the truth. It is impossible not to know the truth. Maybe not very clear, hazy, but something in you always knows the truth, that it is because of the compassion, because of the love that you have been hammered upon. Otherwise there is no need. Amini asked him, but what happens if he never gets to know himself and yet continues to imagine that the others are motivated by personal feelings? Ajnabi said, if he never gets to know himself, it makes no difference as to what he thinks of other people, because he can never have any appreciation of what other people are really like. Amini asked, is it not possible instead of arousing anger a second time to explain that the original writing was composed for this purpose and to invite Mullah to review his previous feelings? Very reasonable standpoint of the disciples. But remember, sometimes reasonable things are not very useful. They don't work. You will agree with the disciple whatsoever he is saying, and this seems to be very, very reasonable, that what is the point of angering him, annoying him twice? Will not it be better to explain him that why in the first place you had said things to annoy him? It will be better to explain. Ajnabi said, it is possible to do this, but it will have no effect, and the master is not interested in being polite, in following the rules of etiquette, manners, etc. A master is interested only in creating an effect, in creating an action, in creating a response. Yes, he can explain to the mullah that what has happened, that may satisfy him, that may cool him down. His anger may disappear. He may no more feel annoyed, but that is not the point. That is not going to create the effect that the master wants. The master wants the mullah to see that he is only a man of knowledge, not yet of knowing, that he is not wise. Explanation will make the mullah more knowledgeable. He will have one more explanation. That is not going to shatter his ego. It is possible to do this, but it will have no effect. Rather, it will have an adverse effect. If you tell the man your reason, he will imagine that you are excusing yourself. And this will arouse in him sentiments which are harmful only to him. Thus, by explaining, you are actually acting to his detriment. Amini said, are there no exceptions to this rule that man must learn through realizing his own state and that his state cannot be explained to him, Ajnabi said, there are exceptions. But if there were enough exceptions to make any difference to the world, we would not by now have any Mulla Firozes left. There are not many, exceptions are there. But they are not many. That's why they are exceptions. They are far and few in between. They can be counted out. They need not be reckoned. A master has to function in such a way that the rule is fulfilled, not the exception. Because 99.9% people follow the rules. Sometimes there is a rare person. But their rare person need not have any help from anybody. He will come to his realization sooner or later. It may be only a question of time. That exceptional intelligence need not be worried about. The master has to function in such a way that the common, the normal mind, the usual mind, the non-exceptional mind, it starts moving and changing. This small discussion between the master and the disciple is of immense significance for you. That's why I have chosen it. Remember those 7 layers of onion? And unless you drop them, you cannot see things as they are. You cannot see that which is. And from your very childhood you have been corrupted. Your whole life up to now has been a life of poisoning. And only you can drop it. I can show you the way. I cannot take it away from you. If I start taking it away, you will snatch and escape. You will think you are being robbed. I can only show you the way. You have to follow it. Meditate over this small dialogue. It is especially for you. Enough for today.